हेलो 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 एवरीबॉडी, थैंक यू फॉर बीइंग हियर. माय नेम इज़ होर्खे पेरासा एंड आई एम हियर विद माय गुड फ्रेंड रिक शू, एंड वी आर हियर टू शो यू द HTML5 डेवलपर प्लेटफॉर्म फॉर विंडोज़ फ़ोन 8. बट व्हाट बेटर वे टू स्टार्ट दैन शोइंग डेमोस. यू रेडी? The magic demo machine will come online in just 1 second. This is my Windows phone. Like all your new Windows phones, it shows the things that are important to me on my start experience. But please ignore the giraffe. This Windows phone, however, has a very interesting feature. And it seems to be able to tune in into what you guys are thinking right now. And though I know that you're really excited about learning what's new on Internet Explorer 10 and HTML5, deep inside, you're all thinking about beer. And while I scroll around this application, you can see that super smooth and looks like our search app. And no, I have not been drinking beer. There is a good reason I'm showing this app. The reason is we have built our first party search experience mostly on HTML5 on Windows Phone 8. The reason we did this, other than showcasing that our platform is extremely capable of wonderful applications, it gives us a lot of flexibility to update it without having to update the client. So whenever Bing has cool new features, you can just push them to the phone right away without having to deploy a new update package to your particular device. So that's very, very powerful. So now let me show you something else. We've been working with a company here in Seattle on an experience called Pulse. Pulse is a newsreader. And the way I use news readers is to learn about cool little cute creatures on the internet. Who doesn't like a green dog? And as I played around with this application, the Wi-Fi, which is over here, seems to be a little slow, you can see that it's actually not very webby. It looks, if it didn't have the address bar of Internet Explorer down there, like any other app on the application. It may even be, a little better than some of the apps that are out there. I'm not going to say which ones. One other thing that this application does is, because we support native touch and gestures, it integrates the pinch gestures to do semantic zoom. So if I pinch, this is a beta app, so it rearranges the tiles. Let's do it again. So you can have a better view and, display more information. It just integrates very nicely into what people and users know how to do already on their phones. Now, let me show you something else. And running the risk of dating myself, I'm going to show you Atari games. And this is probably one of my favorite games of old. And one thing that I want you to notice here is that it says, your device is in portrait. Please rotate it to landscape. So let's do that. And when I do that, the game starts. And so I can shoot these little missiles before they destroy my city. And as you can see, this is a full-feature HTML5 game developed by Atari for Windows Phone that also runs on Windows 8. And that's the power of this HTML5 platform. Now, bonus points. Let's show Pong. It's another game, not the most visually attractive game. But I want you to see not only that I'm really terrible at it, also how responsive and how closely it follows the way I touch the device. And so when you're using our touch and gestures APIs on HTML content, you're not adding a huge amount of latency that will prevent users from actually seeing what they're touching in a way that native applications do. So what are we going to talk about today? We're going to talk about how to leverage this powerful platform to build incredible experience on Windows Phone. And by the way, you can grab it and with little changes, transport it to other platforms very easily. All the games that I showed today, with the exception of Search, run on iOS and Android with almost no changes. And that's the powerful thing about HTML and standards-based platforms. So let's first talk about why would you consider or you should consider HTML5 for your next app. And besides the obvious answer, who hasn't developed an HTML application before? Just a simple web page. Have not. OK. I'm killing myself here. Sorry. anyway, Most people have written even, you know, super simple HTML once in their lives. And I'm not going to promise that it's as simple as just saying, hello world, create a full-featured HTML5 application. But once you start learning about markup languages and HTML5 in particular, it's actually not that complicated. So you can leverage those skills that you have learned over the years and apply them for application developments on the phone. The next thing that's actually really important, because they are standards-based, you can grab the same markup and move it to other platforms, and with little changes and a lot of testing, it will just basically work. And last but not least, if you choose the HTML5 application platform for Windows Phone, you're not really committing yourself to be locked in into an HTML5 sandbox. Using the power of C# and XAML, you can exit the HTML5 container and execute basically anything else that the platform provides for you and make it available to HTML5 yourselves for the very few things that we actually don't expose. Let's talk about a little bit of statistics, because we all like statistics. My friends from IDC have said that by 2013, there's going to be 1 billion devices out there on people's hands, and most people have one or two, like you guys have Surfaces and laptops and phones and multiple phones, and that's pretty awesome. There's going to be 1 billion of those devices that are capable of HTML5 content. So that's a lot of devices. Next, there's going to be about 2 million web developers in the world by next year. Then again, that's a lot of talent that's out there that we want to capture and bring to our platform to build a better and larger ecosystem. 79% of the application developers that ADC has interviewed for this study said that they're exploring HTML5 as an option for some part or the entire application moving forward. And 80% of the mobile apps that these developers are writing, they think by 2015 will be HTML5. And that may not be too far off. If you think about today, on our store, about 60% of the application use the web browser control for some or all these features. Now, I understand that this has, you know, to do with some of them have ads, some of them use it to acquire authentication tokens here and there, but you can do so much more. And we're here to show you how to do it. I think that another point that is good to clarify is, what do we mean when we say HTML5 app? There may be some questions about it. And the context of this talk, and for Windows Phone 8, an HTML5 app is a XAML application that uses the web browser control to display some of or all of its functionality. Okay. Have you guys downloaded the developer tools for Windows Phone 8 already? Good. If you haven't, you should. And with it, you're going to find that we have a new template to make HTML5 applications much easier to develop. And Rick is going to show us how it works. Rick? Yes, let's go back.
Thanks, Jorge. Hi, my name is Rick, and I'm also a program manager for Windows Phone. So what I have up here is Visual Studio, and I'm going to go ahead and create a new project. And I'm going to select the Windows Phone HTML5 app from template. This is a new template for HTML5 app that comes with the Windows Phone 8 SDK. All right, let's have a quick walkthrough of this template. Over here in the XAML, you have a grid, and there's a web browser control embedded in it. There's also an application bar with the backward and forward buttons associated with the browser navigation history. There's also a menu item called Home that will bring you back to the home page. Let's take a quick look at the code behind, which is also pretty straightforward. When the browser is loaded, it navigates to a new HTML file inside the ZAP, and it's located under the HTML folder. Now, under this HTML folder, it is the same file structure as a website. All the markup are described in an index.html file, and the styles separated out into a phone.css file. Now, as you can see, this template already comes with some default layout and styles. Let's go ahead and run it and see what it looks like. All right, so it looks just like any generic Windows Phone app, except that it's built using HTML and CSS rather than XAML. Starting from the next demo, we'll be building a full-featured HTML5 app based on this template. Back to Jorge.
Thank you, Rick. Now, this is all possible because we have Internet Explorer 10 on Windows Phone 8. And this is the same Internet Explorer that's on your surfaces that you're playing around today. And it's hardware accelerated, so it's incredible performance, that was built for touch, that is fast even for applications. Other platforms out there can't really say that. And we have built all the capabilities that you're going to need to provide an offline experience for your apps if they use HTML5. Now, we added a ton of features, and we're going to be talking about them for weeks to come. Please tune in on the Microsoft Windows developer blog. We're not really going to talk about all of them today because I don't want to bore you to death, but we're going to pick up some of the ones that we think are most important for HTML5 application experiences that feel integrated with the platform. So that's the laundry list, and let's move on. Let's first focus on visually attractive apps. We all want to create applications that look fantastic. And sometimes looking good is not that easy. Thankfully, CSS 3.0 provides a bunch of new features that you can use to create beautiful applications much easier. The first one we're going to talk about is 2D and 3D transforms, which basically allows you to grab any element on the DOM and apply a transformation to it. You can rotate it, translate it to a different position, or even rotate it in a 3D space for very incredible results. Then you have transitions. Transitions is a first way that you have to animate things on the page or the application. And the way it works is that you are a transition listener to any CSS property, and when that CSS property changes, the HTML5 platform will animate the change from where it was to where it needs to be automatically without you having to do any work. The next one is CSS animations. Unlike transitions, animations require you to create keyframes. And keyframes is a series of properties on how they're going to change from when your animation starts to where it ends. Like if you want to make the fish follow a route through the, underwater virtual world, you just create a series of keyframes, and the browser will play and smoothly transition from keyframe to keyframe while issuing JavaScript events, so your JavaScript code always knows where the animations are. So if you need to abort or change, you can do it very easily. The next one is shadows. We can apply shadows to text and boxes for that fiery look. Then we have native gradient support. So poor paint is going to be deprecated, so we don't need one pixel images anymore. We just have it built in into the platform. And last but not least, a very important feature that has been heavily requested by developers, we are adding support for custom fonts. Now, we provide a large number of fonts out of the box on Windows Phone 8, but that is really not enough. You probably want to give your application your own brand and your own look, and fonts is an unbelievably important part of it. So we now support the ability to consume and download fonts from the internet and use them on your applications and pages. Very powerful. And Rick is now going to start building an app and show us how to CSS 3 features can start creating something. Rick?
Thanks, Jorge. Hi again. Starting from this demo, we'll be creating a simple tiles app that attempts to mimic some of the look and feel of the Windows Phone start screen. Okay, let's get started. So the first thing I'm going to do is to define a default layout viewport by using the MS viewport rule. And I'm going to give it a width of 480 pixels. Now, Jorge is going to explain this new feature in details in just a few minutes. Now, the next thing I'm going to do is to add some divs, some markup to describe my tiles. And instead of typing, I'm going to use some code snippets that I have prepared in advance. So what I have just added here are three simple divs representing the individual tile, a group of tiles, as well as the home screen. Let's switch over to the style sheet here, and let's add some styles to the divs we just added. Okay, with that, let's go ahead and run and see what we've got so far. So we have a simple single tile. Nothing too fancy yet, but I do want to point out the background color of the tile, as well as the page. So these are styled using the background and highlight keywords, which are associated with the system settings, meaning that if you change them in the system setting, those changes will be reflected on the phone as well.
You need to show them.
Yep. Let's do a quick test then. So I'm on my Windows Phone 8 now, and I'm going into the Settings app, and I'm going into the theme And let's change the color, the background color from dark to light. And I'm going to pick a different accent color, for example, cobalt. Now let's go back to the app. And voila. As expected, the background colors of the tile in the page have been updated without changing a single line of code. Thank you. Now let's add some animation to make the tile flip in when the app starts. So in order to do that, I'm going to use some JavaScript. And in order to use some JavaScript, I need to turn it on first, because by default, JavaScript is disabled for the web browser control for security reasons. So now I'm in my XAML, and I'm going to go into the web browser control. And I'm going to pop over here in the property windows here, and I'm going to check this box that says, is script enabled? All right. So next thing I'm going to do is to add a couple of references to the JavaScript files I'm going to use. So the first reference I added is to jQuery, which is a very popular JavaScript library that make web-based development much easier. And the second reference is to an empty JavaScript file that will hold all of the JavaScript logic in one place for this app. Now, I've already added them earlier, and let's open up this empty JavaScript file, and I'm going to add an empty jQuery document ready function. So this function will be executed when the page is loaded. And inside this function, I'm going to use some code to enable the animation. So let's walk through what I have just added here. I think I've added twice. Yep.
Control Z.
Okay. Now, I grabbed some references to the tiles. And for each one of those tiles, I'm applying a CSS transform of minus 90 degrees along the y-axis, which essentially just making the tiles invisible when the app starts. So the next thing I'm doing is to call a JavaScript function, set timeout, and to wait. So that waits 500 milliseconds, and then execute this callback function for each one of those tiles. And inside this callback function, I'm essentially rotating the tiles back to be on the screen and specifying that the transition animation will take 1 second to complete. So finally, since I've shifted the transform origin earlier, I'm shifting it back here after the transition has ended. Now with all that, let's go ahead and run it and see what we've had so far. All right, did you see the animation? Let's see it again.
Yay.
So, yeah, so that's the demo for the visual.
Thank you, Rick.
Back to Jorge.
So as you can see, adding animations is actually quite simple using our HTML5 platform. Now, this was pretty simple because it's just one tile, but we're going to get it more complicated as we move along on this talk. So now let's talk about touch. We have phones. We're building applications for phones, and users need to be able to touch the applications to interact with it. Now, you know, you all got the brand new Lumia 920, so you can actually touch it, even with boxing gloves. So we need to make sure that responds well to what the user wants to do. The first thing that we support is touch events. And touch events is a way for JavaScript to tell the browser that it wants to capture all touch input and then do something with it. It's built on top of the MS Pointer model. That's the same model that Windows 8 uses. So we share the same code across our platforms. It follows familiar DOM patterns for mouse events. So if you have used mouse events before, transitioning to this touch model is not going to be very difficult at all. And as a nice side effect of having the same code, you can differentiate between touch input, mouse input, and pen input, even though the phone only supports touch input. But if you want an app that works across both platforms, you can do that very easily. We support multiple touch points. Yeah, very important for games. You have a little simulated gamepad on the screen. You want to be able to touch it at the same type of multiple positions to be able to tell, you know, where the user is touching and identify those touches uniquely. So you can do that. And then one very important thing is, even though it's a different model than when iOS and Android uses, we have discovered by working with the top 10 sites that are building touch-enabled mobile websites that converting the investment that I already did for the other platforms and make it compatible with Windows Phone 8 required very few changes. Couple lines of code, listening to new events, and then checking new special flags, and then you're ready to go. We're going to actually talk a lot more about this in a week or so on our Windows Phone developer blog. We're going to have a full tutorial on how to do it, not only for touch, but also for all the Dash WebKit properties that some applications use, and to see how those translate really nicely into the Internet Explorer 10 world. Now, I'm going to talk about something that's somewhat unique to Windows Phone and Windows 8. And that's the ability to capture gestures natively. Before Windows 8 and Windows Phone 8 came along, if developers wanted to do a flick gesture or a pinch gesture like I show on Pulse, you needed to do your own gesture recognizer and figure out what physics you wanted to use. Side effect of that is that not everybody got it right, and it didn't look particularly integrated with the platform. With the gestures event, since we use the same recognizer native applications use, you basically get it for free. And so if you want to respond to flicks, you just listen for the flick gesture on your DOM, and then you're ready to go. And we even give you the inertia callbacks so you know how to scroll smoothly the same way native applications would do. So in a nutshell, the marketing keyword here is that we're giving you access to the Windows Phone 8 touch language. Another very important thing, especially if you want to touch your device with multiple hands, you can recognize multiple gestures simultaneously on different elements on the DOM. Not particularly important, but interesting that you can do it. So I want to see a lot of creativity from this room when when the conference ends. So Rick is going to make our lifeless little tile a little bit more animated by adding touch support.
Yes, thanks, Jorge. So in this demo, we're going to make our tile respond to our touches. So the first thing I'm going to do is to subscribe some pointer events to our tiles. And I'm going to do that by using the jQuery bind function and binding the pointer events to our tiles and using a callback function to handle those events. So the MS pointer move and MS pointer up events, they are very similar to the mouse move and mouse up events, meaning that they are fired when the pointing device, in this case your finger, is moving or when it is lifted up. And MS pointer cancel is fired when the pointer events are canceled by the system, most likely due to default gesture handling such as scrolling and zooming. And in the callback function here, I'm applying a CSS transform when my finger is moving over the on top of the tile and reverting the transform here after my finger is lifted up or when the pointer events are canceled. And the CSS transform I'm applying here is calculated calculated by this helper function here. So what this function does essentially is to figure out how far away your finger is from the center of the tile and then calculate the amount of tilting angle, just like how a tile behaves on the start screen. So one last thing I need to do here is to add a touch action property here to my tile. And what this does essentially is to make sure that the touches I'm applying to the tile will be used to manipulate the tile when they are not scrolling, when the page is not being scrolled. Now with that, let's go ahead and run it. Okay, here we have our same old tile, and when I lay my finger over it, and it is now responding smoothly to my touches as well as being able to scroll. Thank you. Pretty cool. That's our touches touch event demo.
Looking good, Mr. Rick. Thank you.
Back to Jorge.
So now let's talk about, we have a beautiful application that we can touch. And at some point in time, we probably want to display some information. And we want to do it in a way that, it's intuitive and easy to consume by users. So when we approached this in terms of which CSS3 features we wanted to add in Internet Explorer 10 to make this easy, we cannot look at the, you know, it's a good analogy that I want you to guys keep in your mind while we talk about these features is a magazine. Well, I don't think every app should look like a magazine at all. Magazines have kind of set the standard of what people think when they say, you know, there is a lot of content, how to organize it in a way that's approachable. So the first feature I'm going to talk about is multi-column support. Wouldn't it be nice if I had a big paragraph and I can tell the browser, Mr. Browser, please split my paragraph in 5 different columns. And that's all you have to do. The browser will do the rest for you. CSS tree multi-column does it for you. The next one is position floats. And what this feature does, it allows you to position any element of the DOM, very likely to be an image or a graph, inside a paragraph of text, in this case, a multiple column paragraph of text. And it forces the text that's around it to flow rather than being clipped or put on top of. If you have ever tried to do this before this feature was implemented, you will know that this is unbelievably hard to do. But now we do it just a simple CSS style. Next one is CSS regions. And now this is going to be a little bit more difficult to explain. This is an emerging standard, so just bear with me. And it basically allows you to have a template, an HTML5 template, with different regions of it, or divs, that will allow you to put content on top of. In this case, there is number 1 through 5. And it can be whatever style you want, whatever position you want, whatever size you want. And then the browser will grab content from a different source, like an AJAX request, and make that content flow through these boxes nicely, and making sure that the text breaks correctly what it needs to. And then it moves to the next block in the same smooth way that it left up from the previous one. So there is continuity from block to block. And if the content doesn't happen to fit on the template the way you design it on a single page, it provides built-in pagination support so you can switch from page to page to continue displaying the content intuitively. The next one is a nod for our XAML developers. This is an Internet Explorer 10 exclusive feature today that we have submitted to the W3C for standardization, and it basically gives you the XAML grid in HTML. Hello. Okay. This is our Halloween night, so it's dark. Very flexible layout, so pretty awesome. You should try it, but don't expect it to work on other browsers. So if you want multiple browser support, we also have Flexbox. Flexbox is a different way of positioning elements so they flow naturally in this container box, and this has been one of the most requested CSS3 features that we have received on the Internet Explorer team and is now available for you to use. And to show how it works, Rick is going to, you know, add some Flexbox magic to our tile demo.
Yes, thanks, Jorge. So in this demo, we're going to add more tiles and to use Flexbox to create a layout similar to the start screen. So I'm now in my phone.js file, and the first thing I'm going to do is to go to my markup page, and I'm going to add more divs to represent the tiles. All right. So let's switch over to the style sheet and add some styles for the tiles. So what I have just dropped in here are the styles for the tile container. And these styles make the tile container into a flexbox by specifying the display property of a flexbox and also a couple of flexbox specific properties, which essentially saying that for all the child elements inside this div, wrap them around if they reach the end of the row, and also distribute them evenly on the row. Now, with all that, let's take a look. All right. Now we have rows of tiles properly wrapped around and evenly distributed inside our Flexbox. All of that with just a few lines of HTML and CSS. Back to Jorge.
Thank you. So now let's go talk about a couple concepts that are important. Rick kind of touched a little bit when we set the add viewport property to 480 pixels. And what he was actually doing is he was changing the size of what we call the layout viewport. This is Microsoft.com, as he was yesterday. And the layout viewport basically gives the browser the initial information about how to size every element on the page and how to position it. So in the Windows 8 world, that would be the size of the window. In the Windows Phone world, that will be a construct that we made up because just sizing by the window, it's, you know, make the content too narrow and difficult to see. But anyway, it basically gives us a hint on how things will be sized. And then you have the device viewport or visual viewport. And that basically is the rectangle that contains the section of the document that you can see on your device at any given time. A good analogy that I like to use is, like an old inspector, you have a, the device is like a magnifying glass, and you have a piece of paper which represents your document, and you can pan around the document and zoom in and out like a, you will do with a magnifying glass, you know, repeat myself multiple times. And the document is not changing, but the, what you're seeing, the number of pixels that you're seeing on the screen are. So that, those two concepts are important as we move around to the next section, which is how to choose the right viewport size for your content. If you don't say anything, the browser, the mobile browser, will set you up to be 1,024 pixels wide. That's the default. And you can change that in two different ways. The first one is the one from, you know, the years past. And it basically allows you to use a meta tag on your HTML content to size the layout viewport to whatever you want with a lot of constraints, because we had to make this backwards compatible all the way back to the sites that were designed for their first iPhone. Lots and lots and lots of quirks. If you want to avoid the quirks, then we have the wave of setting or sizing up the viewport for the next decade, which is the add viewport support. This is a CSS style part of the CSS device adaptation standard. And it basically allows you to do what you did before with the viewport meta tag, but without the quirks. So if you want to do responsive web design that actually uses the entire available display of our really beautiful high definition devices that we have available for Windows Phone, you need to use the second one. But you have to be prepared to adapt your layout as the user goes from device to device. If you don't want to do that, you can still use the old viewport, and the browser will do the rest for you. So you have the choice, and depends on what kind of results you want. Now let's talk about fixed position elements, which has been kind of like an interesting discussion going around on the internet about this particular topic. And the reason there is a lot of discussion is because most mobile browsers have done this incorrectly. And the W3C says, if you say that you have a fixed position element, the fixed position element needs to be relative to the visual viewport. If we did this, then what will happen is that you will have a fixed element that, as you zoom in, it will remain attached to your visual viewport, and it will cover the content, not a great user experience. What we did for Windows Phone 8 and Windows 8, it is the same behavior on both platforms, we moved it to the layout viewport. And what this allows us to do is we can move the feedback link here on the corner is a fixed position element. And so you only be able to see it if your visual viewport is on top of it. But you can scroll around and actually purchase a surface and not have that feedback thing be covering the, you know, purchase button. And so Rick, in order for it to make sense, I think we should show it. And you're going to add some fixed position support to your app.
Yes. Yes. So in this demo, we're going to add a status bar to our pseudo start screen so that it looks more like a start screen, the start screen. And so the first thing I need to do is to disable the default system tray that comes with the template. So I'm now in my XAML, and I'm going to go to the application page and the property windows here, expanding this appearance group. And under here, I'm going to uncheck this checkbox. So notice the system tray is now gone. And the next thing I'm going to do is to add a simple div to represent our status bar. Now let's add some styles to the status bar here. Like this. So the most important of which is the position fixed property here. This will make the status bar its position fixed to the top of the screen relative to the rest of the page. So with that, let's go ahead and run it. And all right, now we have a status bar on top of our app. And the nice thing about this is that when I scroll the page, it doesn't move along with the rest of the page.
Now, very interesting here, and I'm killing myself again. you notice that the status bar is now actually tied to the visual viewport, which seems to contradict what I just said before. The reason is he has a viewport meta tag on his, actually CSS style on his application, that makes the visual viewport and the layout viewport the same size. So when you fix position element on a mobile optimized application or page, then they behave exactly as you will expect. Thank you, Rick.
Thanks.
So the next thing I want you to show them is, can you rotate?
Oh, yeah. That's right.
That's kind of boring. It looks a little bit like our building experience.
No,
I'm sure you can do better than that.
The page is not rotating with the screen. So part of that is because this template doesn't come with orientation enabled. So in order to enable orientation support, the first thing I need to do is to go to the XAML page and enable orientation. So I'm now in my XAML, and I'm going into the application page, properties, and under here, I'm going to select portrait or landscape instead of just portrait. And IE10, the web browser control, also supports orientation, meaning that the web browser control knows when a page has been rotated and can apply a different set of CSS for that orientation. So the next thing I'm going to do is to add some landscape-specific CSS to our page, like this. So what I have just added here is a media query statement that basically says, if the orientation is landscape, apply these CSS to the page. So these new CSS include a wider viewport width, and also making the status bar disappear, as well as a different dimension for our flexbox. Now, while we are at it, why don't we add some simple animation for the rotation? So what I have just added here are some CSS transition properties. This essentially is saying that for the tiles, container div, and status bar div, when these property, the top, width, and height properties change, make an animation out of that. And the animation will start after 0.1 second, and it will last 0.5 seconds. Now, with all of that, let's go ahead and run it and see what it looks like. Okay. Now, let me rotate the screen. And notice how the status bar disappears away, and also the tiles have been rearranged into a 3x3 grid rather than 2x4 in portrait.
Do it again.
Yes.
Nice.
It's kind of addictive, huh?
Yes. Thank you, Rick. So as you can see, starting to build up on top of these features makes for very compelling experiences with not a whole lot of code, because the HTML5 platform does a lot of the heavy lifting for you. So now, we have lots of features, and we don't really have time to go into, you know, the rest of them very deeply. But I do want to point out five of them that I believe are very important for application developers. The first two have to do with how to build offline applications. And first and foremost, we have app cache support, which basically allows your developer to specify on a manifest file all the resources that your application needs and need to be available offline. When the HTML5 platform first loads your application or website, we'll query for this manifest file and then create a local cache with all these resources in it. So when you access the application, in case there is no network available, it will go into the local cache and find those files instead. We also added support for the online offline events and properties of the navigator object. So your application always knows if there is a data connection available for it to use, or if it needs to go into offline mode and then start caching user data instead of trying to send it over the network. Speaking of caching, we have all heard of the world-famous DOM local storage, but that is so last century. Let's talk about IndexedDB. IndexedDB is a brand new feature we added on Internet Explorer 10 that allows you to have a relational object storage on the device that you can use for your entire application experience or to replicate information to your backend whenever there is a data connection available for you to use. This is like a turbo dictionary, so it's a collection of objects, and we don't specify which type they are, and you can create indexes to those objects however you see fit. extremely flexible, and completely detached from any database implementation that you've ever seen. So there is no need to know any SQL code or do, you know, any weird query language. You can just do it all with JSON and just common HTML5 patterns that you know and love, and which makes this extremely useful. Now let's talk about HTML5 history. We have all used very compelling web experiences in the past. And what happens when we press back? You know, very likely, instead of going back one view inside the application, it navigates out of the experience and takes you to the previous site or to your home screen. And that's horrible. One way to do it is because the reason that happens is that rich applications don't really navigate from page to page. They, you know, query content in the background using AJAX and then show and remove panels of the application as you navigate inside it. HTML5 history allows applications to control the backstack. So as you're moving from panel to panel, you can inject intermediate steps. So when the user press back, it takes you to the previous step versus out of the experience. Much better. So if you're writing applications on HTML5, you should absolutely use this. Otherwise, I will hunt you down. Next is web workers. And this is HTML5 multi-threading for JavaScript developers, which you should not fear. It's thread safe. And it allows you to do cool things like, you know, control the databases or control the cache or make AJAX connections to the backend, but you cannot, under any circumstance, change the DOM. The DOM is owned by the primary UI thread from your application, but you can communicate with your workers using messages. Very powerful. Last but not least is WebSockets. WebSockets is a low latency connection between the application and its server. And it's being standard-based, it works very well across browsers and across servers. And it's designed to replace the comet styles that we all have used, perhaps. And for people that haven't, you know, used it before, it's basically, you know, having a long-lived HTTP connection to a server so the server can send you data as, you know, things are changing in the cloud. With this, you have a low-latency bidirectional communication to the server, so you can do a whole lot more. Very, very interesting. Now, I am a web guy, and I love HTML5. And I do recognize that sometimes what we provide on the HTML5 platform is not enough. Case study, in-app purchases. What happens if you want to have your app mostly written on HTML5, but you also want to leverage all the cool in-app purchase experience that we built in on Windows Phone 8? Or perhaps you want a live tile. And those are things that you can't really do natively on HTML yet, but you can use XAML and C# to actually enable your application to do those while still being able to keep most of your logic on HTML. And the way we do this is by allowing C# to call into JavaScript and JavaScript to call into C#. So two-way communication, and it's extremely flexible. We don't impose a schema, so you can just, you know, pass strings back and forth. By doing either the invoke script function from the web browser control that allows the C# code to call into any script, including eval. And then from script, you can call the external windows.navigator.externalNotify that allows the JavaScript to then generate an event into the C# code that will tell it, hey, something happened, I need your help. So very, very interesting, very flexible, lots of scenarios that are open because of these patterns. And this works on Windows Phone 7 as well. So this is not new for Windows Phone 8. So you can use it today. And there is more. We have received a lot of feedback from our developers that have used the HTML5 web control on Windows Phone 7 and 7.5, and they have told us there are some areas that we need to improve. Some of them, it's being able to set the default background color. Right now, on Windows Phone 7, if you start and navigate to a page on the web browser control, the default background is going to be white while your HTML content is being loaded. White is not particularly great, especially if your application is using the dark theme. So what you end up seeing is these white flashes that look pretty bad. Well, with this, you can set it up to fuchsia if you want, or black, and allow a smooth transition from navigation to navigation. Then, you know, simple things like being able to do backwards and forward navigation from C#. So we added that support as well. For security, we also added total control of cookies and the cache from C#. And then I don't know if you guys have developed applications for the web browser control in the past, but if you had, you used to be required to take every file out of the ZAP and copying it into isolated storage for the web browser control to be able to use it. Ugh. In Windows Phone 8, no more. As you can see on all the demos Rick was writing, he only had to press F5, and then the browser control would just go find it in the SAP if it's there, or on isolated storage if it's there, or on the internet if it's there. So he makes it very, very easy for you to create these applications. Now, one final thought. I haven't really talked about one very important thing about Internet Explorer 10, and that's performance. We are fast. We're actually, in some of the benchmarks that are out there, like SunSpider, the fastest. And we're not only the fastest in the browser, this is key, we are the fastest on applications as well. Because we care about the application experience as much as we care about the experience on our native browser. So if you choose this platform, there is no compromises. Your JavaScript will execute really fast. So in summary, the Windows Phone 8 web platform provides a cross-platform, rapid, and cost-effective way to build beautiful applications that are delightful to use and interact with, and immerse people to get the most out of their content while feeling native and integrated with Windows Phone. Now, a quick call to action. Please download the developer tools. Use that brand new phone that you have and a brand new Surface that you have, and build apps. They don't have to be HTML5, but you know, if you like this talk, please just try it out. And you know, see if the new and powerful and no compromises HTML5 platform we have built will fit your needs. So go out, build great apps. Now we open the door for questions.
Hello. How will you access the WinRT object from an HTML Windows Phone 8 app?
Oh, that's very easy. You can't.
So you will recommend going through the path of like talking to C Sharp?
Correct.
Okay. And also, what about a library such as WinJS that is in the JavaScript Windows Store app development, you know, that like you can use it in order to render like these native Windows 8 controls that look beautiful. Is that available for HTML5 apps on Windows Phone 8?
No.
Oh. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Can you comment on the availability of this working with the Windows 7.8 update?
Oh, so yes.
For existing phones?
So Windows 7.8 update includes Internet Explorer 9, as it did for 7.5. So some of these features work, like we have a hardware-accelerated canvas. You don't have most of the modern CSS3 and HTML5 constructs like IndexedDB and AppCache, for example. But most importantly, there is no touch. So what makes Windows Phone 8 a more compelling developer platform, at least to me, is that there is touch support. So unfortunately for 7.8, we couldn't, you know, do all the work that it takes to bring Internet Explorer 10 to Windows, to the 7.8 platform. But, you know, you have Internet Explorer 9, which is also extremely capable.
Thank you.
Are you guys aware of the work that the Cordova team is doing on Apache to support Windows 8? If you do, can you comment on the difference between that approach and using JavaScript to write Windows Phone 8 apps?
Let's talk about after the end of the talk. So that's a very long answer.
Okay.
Anybody else?
I saw from your original slide the enhancements made for IE10, and I saw XHR cores. So is the standard finalized? And excuse me. What about WebSockets, the security behind WebSockets and web workers for cross-domain?
So that's let's start with the WebSockets part first and web workers. So we actually looked at the standards for WebSockets and web workers, WebSockets being a little bit more complete in terms of how security is built in into the standards. So those are fine because they follow the same single domain policies that you have before. So, you know, just trust them, they're safe, pretty happy. Web workers, on the other hand, we made the conscious choice to not support share workers. Those are, we don't believe they're safe yet. And so we're working with the W3C to try to make into the standards so you can actually implement a share worker pool and actually be secure. Because you don't want multiple tabs to be able to access information on the shared worker pool that doesn't belong to it. The single worker isolated case, there is a lot of security measures built in into it. For example, they can not download scripting files from domains that they don't belong. So a single domain policy still applies to them. And they have a very restricted control of how many things inside the DOM they can access. So they can't read data just by, you know, looking at the document object. It's not available to them. They have to do it through their main thread. And so if you have an, you know, evil.com-like application, it really can't talk to the DOM, so it's secure that way. And then for XHR, they're still, you know, up in then about the standards way, but we just implemented what was there when Internet Explorer 10 came out, and so we're still in conversations.
So the XHR is the same standard as before, where the behavior is different based on MIME type?
That's a good question. I need to get back to you on that.
Okay. I have two questions. The first one, how common is the WebKit engine between IE10 on Windows Phone 8 and Windows Phone? Oh, sorry, Windows 8 and Windows Phone 8. And my second question is, are there any plans to support WebGL as part of IE10?
So the second part is an easier answer. So there is no WebGL support on Internet Explorer 10. And so that's that. There is nothing to announce. And then the first part is, can you kind of rephrase your question a little bit?
So if I build an app that takes advantage of a WebKit, mm-hmm. you know, how common is that across Windows Phone as well as Windows 8?
Okay, so if I understand the question correctly, so WebKit supports a lot of WebKit-specific features. A lot of them are actually available on Internet Explorer 10. The only thing that you have to do is, for most of them, just reduce the dash WebKit prefix, and they would just work. There are some others that are a little bit more experimental, things that haven't been finalized the standard real well. And then you need to add the dash MS vendor prefix for Internet Explorer 10 to recognize them. And then we have Touch. Most of the WebKit implementations out there support the Apple Touch model. We don't support that. We support the MS Pointer model to be more like Windows 8. But the similarities are there that you can actually, with very little code, have your WebKit touch-enabled site and then have it execute on Internet Explorer 10 very easily. So we're going to show you how to do that, I think, next week on the Windows Phone Developer blog.
And if I may add, I don't know if Jorge has already mentioned this, but the MS Pointer, we have already submitted that the MS Pointer events for standardization to W3C.
Yeah.
So.
In the past, it was not really possible to put an XAML element on top of the browser element. So if you call into C# for help mm-hmm. and you want to bring up a UI on top of the IE, is that possible now?
Yes. And it may not be possible the way you think about it. But now we have the, I think it's called Web Browser Brush, but don't, you know, hold me accountable for that. But it basically allows you to render the browser into a texture, and then you can compose elements on top of that texture in Silverlight.
And can it participate in transitions on the Silverlight side too? So you have transforms on the Silverlight side, put the browser control on top, rotate it away, show Silverlight stuff.
Yes, the only difficulty there is if you want to coordinate transitions from XAML into HTML5, like you start the animation in XAML and then transition it to an animation in HTML5, there may be some interesting latency that might make that a little bit difficult.
As long as I can put XAML elements on top of the browser,
yeah.
I'm kind of good.
Yeah, cool. You can totally do that. But that only on Windows Phone 8. That doesn't work on Windows 7.
I thought so.
Okay.
Thanks.
Anything else? Well, I'll be here for a few minutes. Thank you very, very much. And please fill up those evaluations before you, you know, have all that beer. Or, if, I guess. Thank you.
I can take that phone gap question.